Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, December 17th. Here's a thought about the coming of the Omicron variant that goes beyond the usual advice to wear a mask, get vaccinated and boosted, get tested, and choose your interactions wisely. It's that the Omicron variant poses a far greater threat at the collective level than the individual one. That line was written by Atlantic magazine science writer Ed Yong, who has done such a great job generally covering the whole pandemic. His new article is called America is Not Ready for Omicron, and it goes beyond Omicron, this article does. It goes beyond COVID to the state it's all left our healthcare system in, as it affects the rest of your health, too, and our healthcare workers, too. Ed, always good to have you on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Good to be on again.
And before we even get to the societal level, you do write some things about the individual level that many listeners are suddenly having to grapple with. I think they'll hear themselves in this. Like just in the last couple of days, you quote virologist Trevor Bedford saying people who thought they wouldn't have to worry about infection this winter if they had gotten their booster do still have to worry about infection with Omicron. Can you explain the science of why that is?
Sure. So I know that everything is quite complicated right now and that there's a lot of uncertainty in the air. But here's what I think we can say pretty confidently. I think everyone is a little less protected against infection than they were about 2 months ago. And that's because Omicron has the ability to slip past some of our immune defenses. Now, it doesn't do that totally. The way I try and think about it, and this is crude, but possibly helpful, is that Omicron negates one prior immunizing event, so either a past infection or a vaccine dose. So if you have three shots, if you're boosted against Omicron, you're about as protected as you were with two shots against Delta. If you have only two shots in you, you're probably the equivalent of only just one shot before, and that's not enough. If you're unvaccinated, you're just as you're as vulnerable as you were before. Delta was going to be a problem for you. Omicron is still going to be a problem for you. So, you know, the picture is a little mixed. Like, people who are boosted still have a reasonable amount of protection against infection. They almost certainly have a good amount of protection against severe disease. Of course, that protection is not foolproof. Boosted people can still get infected. We are already hearing a lot of stories of that kind of thing happening. But, you know, I think it's a setback, not completely back to square one. It's certainly not a great situation, but also not a catastrophic one. You know, unvaccinated people remain the most vulnerable among us. That hasn't changed. Vaccinated people are a little less protected than they were before. But, you know, they've still got a reasonable amount of protection against the worst excesses of the virus.
So let me stay on the individual track and the societal track with you. You have both things robustly in your new piece about booster shots for individuals. You wrote that the extra dose not only raises a recipient's level of antibodies, but their range. What does that mean, and how does that work with respect to Omicron?
Yep. So imagine that the coronavirus is a ball studded with spikes. Those spikes allow it to recognize and infect our cells. And when we take a vaccine, we develop antibodies that recognize the shape of that spike protein and disable it by gumming onto it, like gum on a key. The Omicron variant has at least 30 mutations that change the shape of that spike, so the antibodies that once neutralized it can no longer recognize it. But partly that's a numbers game, right? Like, if we have more antibodies and if we have a wider range of antibodies, chances are that we'll have enough of them that can recognize the spike and still disable the virus. That is what the booster shot does. It not only boosts the number of antibodies we have, the level that we have, but also sort of diversifies them. It means that we have a slightly wider range of antibodies, some of which will still be able to recognize the weird shape of the spike on this new variant.
Cheryl in Irvington on Hudson, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Brian. I'm just calling because I agree we really need a blanket policy for nursing homes and long-term care facilities, congregate group settings in particular. I have today a holiday party at my mother's nursing home in Great Neck. It's the third day of holiday parties this week. Indoor gatherings at, you know, a nursing home seems not wise at this time. I've emailed the nursing home several times. They're still going forward with them. They do not require vaccination. They do not require testing. They used to require testing for me to enter the facility. Now there's no requirements. And we appreciate seeing our loved ones, but I think a non-essential holiday party is not something we need to do at this time. Yeah, and there's just no enforcement.
Ed, have you been thinking about this? And here's Cheryl talking about the most vulnerable among vulnerable places, a nursing home that obviously has a sick and elderly population. And it seems like suddenly, in the last few days, the shock of Omicron spreading as quickly as it is in the United States has made people suddenly reconsider, should I be going to those pre-Christmas holiday parties that were pre-scheduled?
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that situation, Cheryl. It's really hard, and I honestly think that it's completely unconscionable. That setup is just ripe for disaster, and you shouldn't be faced with that kind of nervousness in your life. I mean, I can speak to this really personally. Today is my 40th birthday, and I was planning to have a party, and I cancelled it last week because of everything that I was learning about Omicron from my reporting. To be honest, I probably should have cancelled it just because of Delta. Like, let me take you through my thinking. I have a piece up today in The Atlantic about exactly this. I am boosted. I am young. I'm pretty confident that if I got infected, I would a bad cold, but I'd be okay. You know, I wouldn't go to hospital. Most of my friends can say the same thing. But I know how fast this variant is spreading. I know that today is just a week before Christmas, and that if people got infected at a party that I threw, they, at best, it could derail whatever chances they have of seeing family later on in the year. At worst, they could carry the virus to vulnerable people that they know, immunocompromised people, elderly people, you know, people who had been vaccinated and boosted but hadn't mounted a strong immune response. My choices not only affect my risk, but they affect my guests' risk and their family's risk, people who don't know me, people who had no say in that decision. And above all else, I know the state of our healthcare system. I've already talked about this, but I really can't stress it enough. America's healthcare system is on the brink and cannot take any more. And this is what I mean by the difference between the threat of Omicron at an individual and a collective level. The threat to me as a boosted person is pretty small. The threat of my choices to all of to the rest of society and to the healthcare system that we all depend on is much bigger. And I need to weigh the latter over the former. This pandemic has always been about choosing we over me. And I think those decisions need to factor into our very difficult decisions this Christmas break. Like, I know that it's hard. I know that people don't want to be thinking about this anymore. But this is the situation we're in. I mean, the reality of a very infectious virus is that A single small bad decision can do exponential harm. But the corollary of that is that a single small wise decision can do exponential good.
Hmm. Here's a tweet from a listener who asks, are the New York City public schools going remote next week into the new year? Anyway, please just shut down the city until at least MLK Day 2022. Now, I'm going to ask Mayor de Blasio a version of that question when he comes on the show in about an hour. He's coming on at 11:30 today. But I think society in general is trying to avoid the kind of initial shutdown that we did in 2020 and manage a new spike in the pandemic with all these other tools that we've been talking about, vaccines, masks, testing, everything else that we've learned now through some experience. Do you have an opinion, Ed, about whether shutdowns are necessary in broad swaths of society in the way the caller is asking for?
Well, I mean, okay. This is really tough because obviously no one wants to do that. And yet, we have a very, very fast spreading variant at hand. And we just, like, the problem of America's individualistic tendencies is that at the individual level, there's actually not that much we can do, right? There's boosting, there's masking, and there's the thing no one wants to talk about, which is avoiding social contact with other people. Like, do we need to do more of that at a grander scale? The thing is, if we do that, we also need to invest in all the other things. Like, obviously, we're not going to do that forever. And the whole point of shutting down is to buy us time to get other things in place, to be better able to control the virus, right? Like, it's not the case that, even if the entire country stayed at home for 2 weeks, like, this virus is still out there, right? It's in other countries, it's in animal reservoirs. So we need ways of controlling it, at the point when we would conceivably lift a shutdown. And that involves all the things we've just said. It involves the physical measures like masks. It involves, ventilation. It involves social policies like paid sick leave. I mean, I just feel like a stuck record saying the same list of things again and again. And the only thing, Brian, that I would, sort of push back on from your question is that I don't think we fully implemented almost any of these things. I think we've always gone for the short-term solution. I think we haven't really understood. Like, I was writing in April of 2020, this is going to be a problem for the next 2 years. Mm. We need to put in the systems and build in policies and things that will help us to protect ourselves instead of just saying, well, the cases are going down, COVID's over. And people have made that mistake again and again and again.
Right. And part of the reason is that people have different opinions and different things that they think should be priorities. Some of it, some of it is disinformation for political purposes, but some of it is well-intended contrasting fears. So I just read you that tweet from one listener who wants basically the city to shut down until at least Martin Luther King Day. Then we get one in response to that. Mr. Young acknowledged low personal risk from Omicron, but the Surgeon General has flagged mental health risks to children from pandemic policies. Now there are rumblings of school shutdowns. These policies are not costless, right? So you get the one who's saying, please shut down the schools right away. And another one who's saying, no, the mental health effects on kids and other things outweigh the risks. So is the formula different now than it was in March of 2020?
So I'll say a few things to that. Firstly, school shutdowns are the result of failing to control the virus through other policies. The same with any other kind of shutdown, same with all the economic consequences. Like, from the start, people have tried to create this weird dichotomy between the physical health consequences and all the rest, right? The economic costs, the mental cost, all of that. it really isn't a choice between those two things, because if you let the virus run rampant and if you don't put in the right policies that actually stop it, you're going to suffer both of them at the same time. And yes, I know that there are mental health consequences. I am personally feeling the mental health consequences of the pandemic. I know that many people are struggling with this. But this is not a result of us trying to fight the virus. It's a result of us failing to adequately fight the virus. And that's why we are here in this situation now, with another new variant. This was all predictable. Every expert I talked to said that if we didn't really take this seriously, we would be back here with more variants, more surges, more talk of possible shutdowns or not. I don't know what to say beyond that. If for every listener who is listening to this and is just fed up, who just doesn't want to think about it anymore, who can't believe we're still doing this 2 years on, I'm right there with you. But if we continue to ignore the virus, we continue to try and do this weird, well, we just have to live with it, let it rip thing, we're still going to be here, maybe in another year's time. And we're going to do it with even less of a healthcare system than we currently have. I really, really need to stress that again. The mental health consequences of all of this, of the pandemic, of restrictions, of having to make these decisions on the regular, is really high. The physical health consequences of not being able to get medical care when you need it are going to be really high. One doctor said to me, when I was reporting for this piece on Omicron, the level of care that Americans have come to expect from their healthcare system no longer exists. Present tense, not future tense. And that is backed up by the reporting I've done, by the testimonies I've heard from dozens, hundreds of healthcare workers who see what is happening around them. If you want to preserve healthcare in this country for anything, for the car accident you might have, for the stroke or the cancer that you might have, we really need to start taking the pandemic so much more seriously than we have been.
One more call. Maris in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. Maris, you're on WNYC with Ed Yong, science writer for The Atlantic.
Good morning. Nice to chat with both of you. One of my passions, as I obsess over Twitter and all the epidemiologists and the indoor air quality scientists, is an area that I don't see focused on enough, and that is on monitoring carbon dioxide in different environments as a warning of bad indoor air quality, which I think has been done in a number of other countries. So, Ed, you talked about it in your article, in many of your articles. I've seen it with Joseph Allen out of Harvard, that we need to know whether the place we're going into has good indoor air quality. But as lay people, we have no way to know that. So there's this idea of putting little CO2 monitors in building, in an office or in a store, or so as you walk into a place, you can say, oh, I'm not going into that place. Their air quality today is not good quality. I'm curious what you think of that.
And that CO2 monitors, we've talked about this a little bit on the show, CO2 monitors as an indicator, because it's an easy indicator to measure of the quality of ventilation in a particular space, which is an indication of how well it's filtering COVID particles, right, Ed?
I don't know enough about this to really make a recommendation on it. I think the general principle that ventilation is incredibly important, and indeed is not talked about nearly enough. I know that people want the tools to make information to make decisions for themselves. That's obviously something we all need to do, and it would help to have a metric that's better than just indoors versus outdoors, although probably that's still the best thing that we can think about. But, you know, again, like what frustrates me about this pandemic is that we're sort of expected to do this on our own, right? Like that, you know, if it's not, you know, you need to get boosted, you need to get vaccinated. It's like, you know, individual people hoofing carbon dioxide monitors around to check the ventilation of their spaces. Like, ventilation is a thing that we can address at a broader societal level and need to address at a broader societal level so that, you know, so that someone's fate during a surge of a rapidly spreading variant doesn't boil down to something like whether they have a carbon dioxide monitor or not, right? Like, so that it actually, so that we create an environment and a society that gives them the best ability to live a healthy life. And we don't have that. Like, the clearest lesson from the pandemic is both that we don't have that and we need it.
Yeah. Just on a practical level, short term, and we're almost out of time. As this caller raises the question of what spaces are well ventilated and not well ventilated, as the previous tweeter was asking about what to shut down, do you have data on where people are tending to get COVID now to then bring it home for household spread? Is it restaurants and movie theaters? Is it NBA games and, you know, 19,000 people arenas, but they're really big? Is it airplanes and other mass transit? We keep hearing reassurances from transportation officials, but I don't know. Is it at work? Is there intel on this?
I actually don't know the answer to that question now. The last studies I've seen that compared all of these different sources were from last year, and maybe there are more and I've not seen them. But I think the most likely answer is all of the above. You know, it's a virus. We know that it spreads through shared air. We know that the risk of that is far greater indoors than outdoors. We know that it's greater when there's lots of people crowded into the same space, when those people are unmasked, if those people are talking and shouting and singing or whatnot. We know the basics. Like the question of how the virus is spreading, I don't think it's a mystery. You know, it's ticking the all of the above box. And I think that, you know, that means that there's a lot of things for us to fix and think about. You know, it's never just going to be the one thing that defeats COVID. You know, it really has to be a grand reimagining of the world that we live in.
By the way, some of my colleagues at WNYC are retweeting this that one of them originally tweeted, "Happy 40th birthday, Ed Yong."
Thanks
for sharing your decision to cancel your party on Brian Lehrer. Helps the rest of us weigh our plans. I'm really sorry, but I'm so grateful for your reporting these past couple of years. So really genuinely wishing you a happy 40th. So that tweet is going around among my colleagues, and I'll second that emotion.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks to all the listeners, all your colleagues. I hope everyone stays safe. I'm sorry we're still in this mess.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.